Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
I know you can't hear it, but we're singing 100%. 8:11 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Man, I did not love Erasure until probably the last like 2 years. And then, because I had, I was always like New Order was great. And, I loved a lot of, Alphaville is one of my favorites. But just for whatever reason, Erasure never hit quite with me. And Yaz, same thing.
Oh, okay.
And then recently, in the last couple of years, I go back and listen to a lot of these albums. I'm like, oh my God, Erasure's amazing,
Sweet.
And so, yeah. All right, 8:11 News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. All right, Candy, I'm either going to tell you something that is so boring that is already obvious and it's not going to affect you at all, or you're going to be like, no way. You ready?
I guess.
Okay. All right.
About Jimothy?
No, it's not about Jimothy.
Okay.
It's a.
All right.
So, question for you: how big is the moon?
Very.
Yeah. Fair enough. Okay. Fair enough.
I'm sorry.
But could you quantify it?
No. It's smaller than the Earth.
Yeah. Okay. So the Earth diameter is about 10,000, right? 24,000 is the circumference. I think I'm about right on that. Circumference is, I know, like 24,000 because it's about 1,000 miles an hour. The surface of the Earth spins at the equator. It's a good fact to know. The moon is 250,000 miles away. It's another good fact to know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But the diameter of the moon is, you want to take a guess? Take a stab. Come on. Take a wild guess.
1,000 miles?
2,100. 2,100. So 2,100 miles.
That's it.
The US,
I don't mean to sound like, oh, that's it, but that's wow.
That reaction is why I brought this up. Because the United States is, 3,000 miles east to west, roughly?
That's crazy. So we could drive the moon from like Florida to New York?
Yes.
Wow.
That's the reaction I had.
Wow, that's crazy.
The moon is really small, which like rationally you know that because
right,
the gravity of the moon
right.
is so much smaller than the Earth's, and so obviously the moon has to be a lot smaller than the Earth. But you think of the moon as being, I'll just confess, I have a master's degree in philosophy, and I'll confess, I tend to think the moon is basically the same as the Earth. It's really, really, really big.
Because you think of it like that.
Because it's up there, and I see it all the time, and it looks big. I mean, it looks as big as the sun to me, so obviously they're the same size, because I'm Shaquille O'Neal. that's
too.
A separate issue. So this will mess with your brain. Australia is how big?
1,000 miles?
I don't know. About, Australia is about 2,500 miles from east to west. So the moon is smaller than Australia.
That's crazy.
But doesn't that mess with your brain?
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't mean to give you that. I didn't mean to give you that reaction.
Not a crater. That's a crater.
Exactly. So the moon is just, small. Anyway, there are some of you, listen, I know, some of you are like, duh, I went to grade school. And some of you are like, no way, like Candy and me. So, I'm just trying to share things with you that might make your day different. You could test that with people. You can ask them how big they think the moon is, and, you can throw some facts at them if you prefer. 437-1620, 437-1620. Oh, did you see the story about the Michelin star restaurant that got the chef who got arrested in Japan? Because on top of his, after the 25-course meal, that's how Michelin's, they get their stars, right? That's the super best and highest crazy food places. He put ants, an ant.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no, not Japan. South Korea. Sorry, South Korea. And ants are not part of the 10 listed approved insects you're able to consume. Grasshoppers, mealworm, silkworm. They are allowed for human consumption, but ants are not. So the end of his 15-course meal, they're eating, it's got an ant on the top of the dessert. And he says that they don't even serve, it's not in every dessert or whatever. It's only 60% of the people that opt to do so. 49,000 services over the last several years. So only 30,000 people ate the ants. Would you eat an ant on top of a dessert if at the end of a Michelin meal?
Yeah, I've had ants.
I'd try it too.
Yeah.
I mean, look, if a Michelin chef says try it, I'll try it.
Right. Yeah, you know, the fish out started
it sounds
serving
super
it, I would
nasty
buy
and gross.
Anything that they do.
But maybe, right. I mean, if you're already going to engage in that kind of activity, you know, why not? So the court verdict for him is due September 2nd. Whether he's going to be in jail over serving ants on top of the Michelin two Michelin stars, by the way, for this restaurant.
Better all right, than uncles.
What's right? that?
I said, well, they're better than uncles. Am I right?
I don't know what uncles is.
Ants and uncles?
Oh.
I'm sorry.
Well done. Hold on. No, I have something for just exactly this occasion, and you'll love it.
Boo. Boo. Boo.
Thank you, Jonathan Green. Candy's got traffic on the fives.
Man, okay, Little Mermaid at PLT is happening now through August 9th. Journey Under the Sea with a theatrical take on the classic Disney movie. Tickets available at the box office, PensacolaLittleTheater.com. Taking a look around Pensacola, it does look like the only thing that I'm seeing still is that power outage downtown, and it looks like it's still there. It's Garden and A Street, and it is backing things up in that area, right by St. Stephen's Roman Catholic Church. If you see an accident or a slowdown, other than that, or that's solved, let us know. 437-1620, Candy with traffic on the fives.
Not to critique, but that was a little more sung in the style of Ursula and not Sebastian.
Oh, my God. Okay. Are you done? All right.
Is your house your dream home? Or at least, is it on the way there? Maybe it's time for a change. Maybe all you really need to turn your house into your dream home is an appliance upgrade. When it's time for an upgrade, then it's time to visit Topps Appliance in Milton. They're locally owned and operated. They have top-of-the-line freezers, refrigerators, dishwashers, and stoves to dependable washers and dryers. Topps Appliance carries the brands you know and trust, like GE, Hotpoint, Speed Queen, and more. Topps Appliance in Milton. They offer delivery and installation, something you won't get from the big box stores. And they have many items in stock, so you can take your new appliance the very same day. Topps Appliance. Check them out at toppsappliance.net on Highway 90 in Milton, just east of Stewart Street. Turning your house into your dream home. Topps Appliance.
Managing your ECUA service is easier. The new My ECUA mobile app puts everything you need right at your fingertips. From paying your bill, submitting service requests, and reporting issues like missed collections, damaged or lost bins, water main breaks, and sewer overflows, it's all right there in one easy-to-use app. Take control of your services anytime, anywhere. So download My ECUA. It's available in the App Store and Google Play.
I'm Dr. Isaac Williams, running for Escambia County School Board, District 3. District 3 is asking for a change, and I agree. District 3 deserves a representative who will listen, communicate, and stay connected. I'm a retired military leader, a pastor, a community leader, and I'm ready to serve. I'll support teachers, strengthen schools, put students first, and always involve parents. I'm Dr. Isaac Williams. On August 18th, I will appreciate your vote.
Paid political ad by Dr. Isaac Williams, Escambia School Board, District 3.
It's the Always Sunny Show. When you're ready to throw a barbecue, it's Always Sunny's. Join us today at 9:30 with me, Eldon Scott, to hear about barbecue events in the Pensacola community, win some amazing prizes, and hear from community leaders and how Sunny's Barbecue has built a strong Pensacola for 40 years. Pep Talk with Eldon Scott, spreading the spirit of barbecue far and wide. Remember to tell Sunny that Eldon sent you.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
The five-day outlook is calling for intense flooding, followed by the end of the world!
You don't need panic. You need information. News Radio 92.3.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
Our first remembrance is for Robert Bob Chavez, the Vietnam veteran who became internet famous this week after engaging in a horrific attack on an innocent young man during the national anthem at a Chicago Cubs game. In case you've not seen the infuriating video, the young man, whose name has not been released, so we'll just call him Glenn, is doing what every young wokeite learns in his progressive duties to sing the national anthem, that racist and jingoistic anthem. He is sitting down. obviously in protest, although possibly in indifference, perhaps just scrolling in oblivion. Regardless, behind him stands Bob, a Vietnam veteran, who leans over and asks him repeatedly to stand up. When Glenn refuses, Bob suddenly and violently smacks Glenn in the head and reiterates the demand that he stand for the anthem. It's a savage attack. It could easily have given Glenn a concussion, or knocked him out, or even broken his neck, or killed him with its brutality, or just made him wish he'd had a V8. Despite this barbarity, Glenn somehow manages to muster enough strength to stand up and not bleed out in front of everybody, and that's when it gets weird. According to Chavez, after the confrontation, the two began talking, apologized to each other, and became friends. Glenn even bought Bob a beer, probably because he was concussed. When security came to escort Bob out of the stadium for this highly violent and illegal battery, Glenn told him it was no big deal and Bob remained at the game. Bob even went on TV later to explain that he was sorry for the incident and his emotional reaction. Well, this is incredibly unacceptable. What is this world coming to when a minor smack on the head by an older man isn't treated like the life-threatening assault on liberty that it really was? We can't have a civilized society when people are walking around like playground vigilantes, coercing compliance with social norms by inflicting their own judgment on younger people and then daring to become friends with them afterward. Of course, we are horrified that Glenn was not allowed to simply sit down during the anthem, an obviously good thing, but we are even more incensed that this rogue act of corporal discipline is actually being celebrated by some people. Have you learned nothing from us? Aren't we always saying that violence never solves anything? Especially the violence of teaching young men to behave properly when they aren't living up to the expectations of their elders. And we most certainly don't want other anthem sitters to fear for their own safety at sporting events, because that might lead them to stand up just out of fear of some other village elder disciplining them the same way. And then where would we be? Whole stadia of Americans actually honoring the flag and the men and women who fought and died for their safety and prosperity. Glenn should have pressed charges. Bob should have been jailed and convicted. Maybe executed. Non-violently, of course. And a whole country of rough justice advocates should have learned that you can never touch another person in an unwanted way. You must always call the authorities to solve your problems. And men can most definitely never become good friends with other men after having engaged in a dispute or a confrontation, like the millions of men who fought first and befriended later over the course of human history. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, Sophie Cunningham, the WNBA player who went viral recently for her prolonged and exaggerated finger point at DeWanna Bonner during an incident when Cunningham's teammate Caitlin Clark unfairly received a technical foul, but Bonner did not. Despite the wild popularity of this silently condemnatory image, the WNBA has now officially prohibited anyone from licensing merchandise featuring the point. Apparently, the WNBA dislikes making money, which might explain the pay gap with the NBA. But that's not what brings Sophie before us today for cancellation. No, this is much, much more serious. In a lengthy interview with ESPN, Sophie said that men should not be allowed to compete in women's sports, even if they identify as women, or as we prefer to say, are actually women because they think they are. This transphobic macroaggression was bad enough, but then, when asked about the comments in a press interview, she had the temerity, the nerve, the gall to reaffirm her opposition to people identified male at birth competing against women.
I think I said what I said. I think it's kind of common sense. And I think I'll always believe in that. I think it's really important to protect children. And that's little girls who are also involved in that category. And so I stand on what I said. And I always believe that.
I said what I said. Obviously, this is unacceptable. Certainly, anyone who believes in biological gender and the necessity of separating cis women from trans women in sports is engaging in blasphemy against the holy acronym string. And even though people sometimes mistakenly believe we celebrate people for standing up for what they believe, that's not actually true. We celebrate people for standing up for what they believe when it agrees with what we believe. That last part is very important. And especially when someone is challenging core orthodoxy of the rainbow gospel, it cannot be allowed. But it's in fact much worse than this. Sophie Cunningham is a woman of privilege, being both white and straight. As such, it is her obligation to acknowledge her privilege, demonstrate shame and repentance for it, and then use her social power for those who do not have it, namely black and LGBTQIA++ players in her league. Much like the teammate, Caitlin Clark, who is also straight and white, the real sin here is that they either stay silent on race, gender, and sexuality, which would be bad enough, or as with Sophie's comments, blaspheme the rainbow. With roughly a third of WNBA players being lesbians and two-thirds being black, this league is filled with members of racial and sexual minorities, meaning it has an obligation to affirm, protect, and represent them at every turn. And if Sophie Cunningham wants to redeem herself, she must apologize and reaffirm the third antinomy of modern feminism. Women must be protected from having to play sports against men who identify as men because biology matters. But also women must play sports against men who identify, must play sports against men who identify as women because biology does not matter. Also remember Corollary 6 to the third antinomy. Even though men are larger, faster, and stronger than women, men are also never better at anything than women because men and women are equal. Accepting, memorizing, and cherishing these basic contradictions is at the heart of our orthodoxy. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Finally, this week's hand-carved mango wood hand drum of inclusion with organic hemp yarn macrame accents and shoulder sling goes to the collective body of therapists and family counselors in the United States for their wonderful work at destabilizing the traditional nuclear family. As the Wall Street Journal reports, a study of 7,000 parents who are estranged from their children revealed that one-third of them believe their child's therapist recommended cutting off ties with the parents. Now, of course, the highly misguided, conservative-leaning Wall Street Journal, tool of the patriarchy and perpetuator of male supremacy culture that it is, criticized this development, lamenting that more than 25% of young adults are estranged from their parents, a statistic which surely would not be so high were it not for the outstanding work of the highly trained wokists in the professional meddler industry, typically referred to as counseling. But of course, we celebrate this accomplishment because our entire model is based on replacing the traditional structures that bind people together in stable relationships over time, keeping the next generation tethered to the experience and wisdom of the past. Our cause thrives when young people rebel against their parents and eagerly dive into whatever absurd cause our order offers them as a way to acquire meaning and distance themselves from their families, undermining that traditional bond and convincing them that they know better. Where do you think climate activism, the organic and whole food movements, and data center opposition come from? Children who rebel against their parents' beliefs can be persuaded to believe in almost anything. You see, one of the most powerful forces for traditional values perpetuating themselves over time is the family. It's also vital for reinforcing religious faith. Even the Bible tells Jews and Christians to honor their parents as a way of being blessed by God, which they dare to refer to as their father. Stupid patriarchy. Involuntary but mandatory family relationships teach people to forgive, to accept, to endure, and even to serve people they don't like, sublimating their personal desires to the demands of the relationship and people outside themselves. This obviously teaches them to be better people. But if we replace the stability of unconditional love and involuntary relationships found uniquely in the nuclear family with a never-ending parade of temporary and shifting relationships, both sexual and non-sexual, people become selfish, weak, mushy-minded brats who can then be easily molded into government-worshipping socialists, deriving their identity from the group and bringing them safely into the camaraderie of being comrades with each other under the watchful and nurturing eye of us, their dear leaders. So well done, American therapists and counselors, for encouraging children to break up with their parents just because they're parents. Great job telling them what they want to hear, that they're smart, their parents are fools. So keep up the excellent work of catering to children's self-proclaimed trauma, blaming their parents for everything that's wrong in their lives, and giving them an easy way out so that all relationships eventually become weak, temporary, and self-serving. You really have a talent for making the worst sort of people with your advice. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And now, brethren, sistren, and otherin, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal and go forth and transgress no more.
8:29 on News Radio 92.3. And by the way, my best friend in high school, they became friends after the one spit on the other and then the other one punched him and then they became best friends after that.
Oh, that's
how men do.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, you know, normal. All right, Candy has traffic for us.
We are watching a power outage that's affecting a little bit of downtown. The traffic lights at Garden and A Street looks like they are still down. It is backing up a little ways. 437-1620, if you see that accident or slowdown this morning, it's brought to you by Frontier Motors. Only dealer Dave Ramsey recommends in Pensacola. Frontier Motors, they're on Beverly Parkway. Candy with traffic on the fives.
Also true that the Women's NBA Players Association is prohibiting the licensing of the Point for merchandise because they complain about not making enough money, but they are refusing to make money. It's amazing. They call it a derogatory gesture. All right. I probably haven't given Steve enough time to make any kind of a promo, so I won't force him into it. Steve will have your local news coming up next after Fox. And then after that, we have the wrap. I'm surrounded today. It's outstanding. I'm excited about it. We got Jewel Canada Wynn here in studio and Kim Klein here in studio. So we'll talk about teachers and merit pay and a whole bunch of things. You never know what we're going to get to, but I'm sure it's going to be. And curfews. We'll definitely talk about curfews. Coming up next after the news.
News. I'm Therese Crowley. Ready for more pain? After 13 nights of CENTCOM airstrikes, President Trump suggests Iran hasn't felt enough pain yet to make a deal. So he's weighing a massive new attack, bigger than Epic Fury, to get them to the table.
They would like to do something, but I say they're not ready yet. They need more of the same.
The president also saying he'll use frozen Iranian assets to pay for any damage to ships and Gulf neighbors. Iran's foreign minister warning the chaos from that confiscation won't be pretty or peaceful. President Trump braving a threat environment tonight. The rescheduled White House Correspondents' Dinner at the D.C. Waldorf tonight after the attempt on his life at the April Hilton dinner.
The Secret Service has investigated roughly 10,000 threat cases so far this year alone. That's a 40% increase compared to this time last year.
Fox's Christina Coleman. America is listening to Fox News.
Good morning and happy Friday. It's 8:31 right now, 82 degrees and sunny. I'm Steve Taylor in for David Wayne on News Radio 92.3. About 1,500 customers in the area of Savannah Street in Pensacola near the 110 were without power earlier. Now down to about 614 customers still without power at the moment. That power went out shortly after 6 a.m. A crew's on site, and at this point, FPNL estimates it'll be back on in a few hours. It is affecting traffic in that area, and Candy will have the report on that in just a few minutes. Water and noise are the big worries for people who are fighting the data centers in Escambia County. Escambia County commissioners voted unanimously last night, declaring data centers don't fit under the county's current land development code. Water and noise are the big worries for people who are fighting the data center. Brandy Johnson, an anti-AI data center advocate, told Channel 3
that we don't want any data centers here in Escambia County. We don't want big ones. We don't want small ones. We don't want medium. We don't want AI. We don't want closed loop. We don't want edge. We don't want any.
Dozens of protesters like Johnson showed up hours before that meeting to make their case. Commissioner Stephen Barry says he understands the concerns.
Water, obviously, with data centers is an issue. Eats up a lot of land. So utilizing dirt, utilizing water, utilizing power.
Yeah.
I mean, even if you're paying for the power, you're still pulling out of the grid. And you're ending up with a product that has couple of engineers and a half dozen security guards. I mean, we end up with no job creation.
His comments came before the commissioners voted unanimously to block the facilities under the current zoning. A public hearing on the formal ordinance is following August 6th. Moving Pensacola's recycling drop-off location is paying off in a big way. Mayor D.C. Reeves says the new site on Leonard Street has a contamination rate of just 5% compared to as much as 90% at the Old Summit Boulevard location.
And since opening on May 5th, the city's recycling drop-off at 100 West Leonard Street has a 5% contamination rate. And if you compare that to Summit Boulevard, it was 85 to 90% contaminated. I think that's a pretty good decrease pretty quickly.
Reeves says the move also saves taxpayers money, cutting the annual cost of operating the drop-off site by about 90%. A proposed city curfew for minors will be a big discussion for the Pensacola City Council in the near future. Police say one of the biggest things that needs to be in the law is parental accountability. Looks like a good weekend ahead. Let's check the forecast from Channel 3.
Another hot and humid day to round out the work week is on tap this morning, starting out in the upper 70s and low 80s under mostly clear skies. And as we go into the afternoon, highs will be climbing into the low 90s, but feeling more like the triple digits when you factor in the humidity. That continues into the weekend with just a chance for an isolated shower or storm to pop up in the afternoon. I'm meteorologist Marian Caldwell with your WAR First Warning Weather.
Thanks, Marian. Let's check in with Candy for traffic on the fives.
All right, still watching the power outage affecting the traffic lights downtown Garden and A Street. There's a bad up there, but plenty of side streets, as you know. 850-437-1620 if you see that accident or slowdown this morning. It's brought to you by Discover, and they want everybody to feel special. That's why they double all the cash back you've earned on your credit card at the end of the first year with cash back match. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Candy with traffic on the fives.
Thanks, Candy. Right now, sunny at 82 in Pensacola. It's 81 in Gulf Breeze, 80 degrees in Milton right now at 8:08. Actually, it's 8:34. Clock is moving. Next news is coming up at 9. Breaking news, of course, happens anytime. And now let's check out what's happening on Wall Street. This is Your Money Now on News Radio 92.3. Chris Bryan says there's a difference in where you live as far as your home costing.
Florida home sales climbed for the 10th straight month in June, but the picture wasn't the same everywhere. P&J reports that in the Pensacola, Escambia, Santa Rosa metro, closed sales were essentially flat, up just 0.5% to 864 homes. The median sale price rose 2.8% to $348,000, even as other major metros saw much larger jumps. Statewide, the median price hit a record $432,000 as inventory tightened and buyers kept entering the market. Chris Bryant, News Radio, 92.3.
Well, as the opening bell, the Dow Jones average was up. It says 51,760 points is up 0.10%. S&P 500 is 7,411 as up 2.83 points. And it looks like the NASDAQ, it's kind of moving right now, is down. That's at 25,097 points. I'm Steve Taylor for News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
You don't always have time to sit and listen. That's why Pensacola Right Now works the way it does. Every few minutes, you get the latest local news, traffic on the fives, weather, and updates you actually need. So whether you're in the car for 5 minutes or 50, you're always caught up. Pensacola Right Now with Chris and Austin. Weekdays 4 to 7 on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
To the hip, the hip, you don't stop. Rap.
I will definitely call you back later then.
Come on, wrap it up.
Big circle.
Okay, you know what? Wrap up the circle thing. Come on.
Mr. Parker, wrap it up, please.
Okay.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.
That's a wrap. I love it when I get to make friends out of the people that I have in as friends for the wrap. It's great. So we have Jewel Canada Wynn, who is a longtime history, right? You taught history, Jewel, is that right?
Yes, history.
And of course, she was on city council for a long time. And she was my Democrat connection when I was at the DNC and many other things. So, Jewel, welcome back.
Thank you.
Kim Klein, who was a longtime teacher of government at Gulf Breeze High School.
Yes, I taught AP Gov. I taught comparative politics, coached the debate team.
Yep.
And I taught American history at different points, too.
But. And that's your degree. And you ran, of course, for state representative against Alex Andrade as a non-party, no-party affiliate, right?
Correct.
Is that how you ran?
Okay. Correct.
I feel like I'm surrounded today. It's great. I have three liberal or liberal-leaning women in the room and me, and it's great. I love that. It makes it for an interesting. Okay, so anyway, with Candy here. So, and I love the – I like that. I think that's always interesting. It's boring to talk to people who always agree with you. You know, that's just – you can talk to yourself that way. Okay, so let's start with man, I don't know. There's some that are really – you know what? I want to make sure that we talk about this one. There's a school issue that I did not get a chance to talk about on the show, but I had just listened to the Escambia County School Board meeting from last week, and a lot of teachers and or union reps showed up to talk about how in Escambia County, there are two things that the teachers do not have. They do not have bereavement leave as separate from your, you have to use up all of your sick leave or whatever, and then you can get bereavement leave. And they also don't have a duty-free lunch period, which people might not know that term. They might think, like, on a cruise when there's no duty on the tequila. Duty-free just means having no obligation, so you can sit and eat lunch for a half hour, just like, of course, the kids get to do. I absolutely think that the no-obligation lunch makes sense. The bereavement leave is a little more, to me, nuanced because I think that leave is leave, and, you shouldn't be paid for not doing work, and so if you have leave that you take as personal days, if you take it for vacation, if you take it for being sick, if you take it for a deceased relative, to me, those are all the same thing. But, you know, I'm willing to be persuaded. So, Jewel, you worked in the Escambia County school system for a long time, right? These seem like, I mean, there's certainly hot issues.
When we talk about leave, I mean, you get X number of days per year,
mm-hmm.
okay? So, if you say you're at the lowest end, you get 10 days of leave per year. Now, the way sometimes they do it is you get X number for the first semester and X number for the second semester.
Okay.
And then sometimes if you go over, you can't use the second semester allocation.
Okay.
So it's 37 and a half hours. It used to be. I don't retire. So
this is
I can only do the formula that I remember. And so 37 and a half and 37 and a half. So when you really look at that and you talk about leave, that is not a lot of leave. You know, they want you to be in there. Mm-hmm. Bereavement leave.
In part because it's so hard to find replacements
and keep
consistency for the students.
The one that I think that ticks me the most is not having the duty-free lunch. That is the one that I would fall on my sword for.
And I'm with
for.
You on that one. That one makes no sense to me.
I would fall on my sword for that one. A teacher, after they done did four classes or whatever the number of classes that they did, they need that 30 minutes because you only get 30 minutes.
Yeah.
So many times the teachers have to run errands in there. Sometimes a student would just stop by because they had a problem or issue, and you cannot. No good teacher would turn them away.
Right.
And then sometimes you get called down to the office to do something on that. So, again, I think the duty-free leave is the one that I would fall on my sword.
The half hour.
For.
Well, and just eat and have your time.
I didn't realize that that was a thing in Escambia County. I taught in Santa Rosa County, and we didn't, I taught at the high school level for the majority of my career. We didn't have to do anything during lunch period. I mean, our lunch was to ourselves. One of the differences that we did have in Santa Rosa County compared to Escambia was that we didn't have like a dedicated planning period. So you had like was supposed to be 0 hour at the beginning of the day, which again was the time when you really couldn't get anything done because that's when kids came to make up tests. That's when if you had a parent call, you had to take. Mm-hmm. So we taught like 6 out of 6. And that's a difficult thing to do. I don't think a lot of people realize that. It's like I used to say this is the 5th of 6 shows a day that you have to go in. And then you get to the 6th period and you're like, did I say this already? Because I feel like I've said this 6 times today, you know. So it's that is something that I always felt like, at least from the Santa Rosa County side, that didn't make sense. Like, I felt like teachers do need, like, a dedicated planning period within the day so that they can regroup. Sometimes lesson plans don't work. And you got to go back and say, let me fix this before I go into the next lesson. But when you're teaching 6 out of 6, you don't have that option. You know,
there is no recovery. There's no timeouts, no pauses, no
And we
chance,
had a dedicated planning period. So teachers did have a planning period.
But Escambia is 7, right? Is it 7 school periods?
6.
It's 6.
I think I remember it is 6. I tried to forget it.
But a school day is 7 hours, 6.5 hours?
No, it's 6. You have 6 periods.
6 periods, okay.
You have 6 periods today. But that planning period is important. And again, the planning period sometimes is not the planning period.
Because it gets taken up by other things.
It gets taken up by other things. And so, again, you find some teachers are better organizers than others. But sometimes you find yourself being overwhelmed by the fact that if you're going to have the teachers, parents. Now, some schools do it differently. Sometimes when the school day begins, there's like this 30 or 40-minute period before school begins. They try to put all teacher conferences during that period in there. But sometimes that doesn't work because parents also work as well. And so you try to make it through there. Then, of course, most good teachers will find some way to help their students. They're doing their plan. So, again, when you talk about it at the end of the day and you haven't gotten all your papers great.
Well, I want to get to that, too, because, one of the things it's kind of funny in this job. Okay, so I'm on the air for 4 hours, right? And some people have the idea, like, you work 4 hours a day. Huh.
Yeah.
I work 11 or 12 hours a day.
Right.
And I'm on the air for 4 hours. But, people don't see it. They don't know the work. And there are some people who do this job, do talk radio. And, they're on the air for 4 hours and they work 4 hours and 30 minutes. There's different levels of prep for all people who do this work. What is it like for a teacher? I've never really thought much. I mean, I was a teacher in college and I know that, we'd be so many hours in class, and then there's hours out of class when you're either prepping, organizing, and or grading, which is obviously a fairly time-intensive thing. But how many hours a week would you say, when you're teaching in the high school, Kim, how many hours a week were you working?
Gosh, at least 50 or more. Mm. And I'll tell you, I mean, there were times when I would take personal days just so I could get caught up on my grading, because there is no time during the day to do grading. I read this article in The Atlantic about that we're in a post-literate society now. And I tie so much of that back into the loss of time for teachers to be able to adequately plan and grade. Because when I came in to teaching, I was, just gangbusters about these kids need to write a research paper. They need to go. I'm teaching juniors and seniors before they go to college. They need to know how to do this.
Absolutely.
So I spent 2 weeks of my 2 weeks of Christmas vacation was grading
those
research papers. And you realize, well, okay, my kids were older and it was easier for me, but there's no way that you could expect people to do that. So teachers can't really assign the type of rigorous work that students need. And we saw more and more, like, over the last 15 years of technology taking over, you know, and that was kind of a push from the state level about technology in the classroom, technology in the classroom. Don't be the sage on the stage. Nobody wants to listen to you. And I'm like, you know, but there's a value in learning how to pay attention and take notes.
Of course. And the thought process to produce an extended argument, a protracted argument that's organized in language is a different kind of skill. So I just want to make sure I heard what you said right, that it sounds like you were saying there's an incentive because of the extraordinary amount of time it takes to grade papers to not assign things that will create that time obligation, so you assign less of the stuff that really students need to develop those language skills.
Well, and
or at least there's an incentive to not do it. Is that right?
That's absolutely right. But I'll tell you what, there's also this mentality in teaching that those of us that were older were like, you just have to come in and expect that you're going to have to do all this work that you're not getting paid for. But the younger kids coming in out of college who have, like, you know, $50,000 worth of debt to pay back. They're like, I can't, because I have to have a second job in order to pay this back. Yeah. So I can't do all this work for free. And so you had kind of this conflict. And as I got older, I realized, you know, because I would be irritated at the young teachers of like, come on, we did all this. Mm. You have to pay your dues. But then I thought, well, it's not really fair to ask people to work for free.
I wouldn't do that.
You know?
I'll get to you in just a second, Jewel. Let me get a quick pause. Candy has traffic on the fives.
This is brought to you by Anderson Subaru and not showing any slowdowns or delays right now. I'm not sure if that thing was fixed downtown, but it looks like it may have been since traffic is flowing more smoothly. 437-1620 if you see that accident or slowdown. Candy with traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, Candy. It reminds me what you were saying, Kim, of when I was teaching at the college level. I made a decision early in my teaching that I was not going to correct punctuation, grammar, word use. I was really just grading papers the way I had assigned them. I was always grading was either pass fail on every element. And so all I had to do was basically skim the paper to see if they grasped the concept that they needed to grasp, because I knew that if I was going to actually correct grammar and rhetoric and teach them how to be better writers, that it would take four times as long to grade that. So I saved myself that trouble. But of course, I recognized in the process that I was allowing that to slip through and it wasn't getting improved. Jewel, your average work week?
My average work week was, like, some years I would have 180 students. And so... Yeah. That's a lot of students to grade papers. And that was taking papers at home.
Uh-huh.
The requirement was that you had to make contact. No student should be failing in your class if you have not made contact with a parent.
Okay.
So that meant that you had to go set time out to do these parents' conferences. And they told you all these crazy
stories
about, I'm sure. About why their student was is here it is almost the end of the semester and they did not know their baby has a zero and didn't do any work. And so you're trying to do the very best that you can when you have 180 students and you have to grade papers. The research part of it, we had this policy years ago is that in social studies, you were going to teach writing, and when you taught the writing and you were getting ready to do a research paper, then you contacted English teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And so the English teacher would try to help you out in making sure that the kids paid attention to punctuality. When I taught world geography, I counted spelling.
Mm-hmm.
As I counted spelling, and then I told them, there's no reason you live in Florida and you cannot spell Florida. Make me understand.
You're why so you mean, Jewel. How dare you?
You know, why you can't spell Florida, and why do you not know Tallahassee is the capital of Florida and not Miami?
Yeah.
So I had a problem with that. And so I would count spelling, and they would all get upset because you knew I meant Florida, you knew I meant Tallahassee, you knew I meant, you had to do that. And so you always got this kickback because you didn't give points for the attempt. But, you know,
we don't even teach geography anymore, which is so, like.
Tell me, wait, what? What do you mean?
We do not teach geography anymore.
No. Say it again. You got to be kidding.
We do not teach geography anymore.
In classes? In Escambia and Santa Rosa County, we don't teach geography at any level?
They go west on Interstate 10.
Come on, come to the mic a little bit.
The first state that they get to is Mississippi.
No, come on.
I'm just saying.
They don't have to memorize capitals. They don't learn places, Europe, South America, anything.
None of that, which is unfortunate.
But why? Why don't they teach? Is it because other things crowded out? Or?
Right, yes.
It's crowded out.
Science and math became the most important thing after there was a whole report that came out during the Bush administration, A Nation at Risk, which drove the whole testing thing, right? Yeah. But it was this whole thing that we were so far behind on science and math. And for those of us who taught English or social studies, and to me, social studies got really pushed to the bottom. I graduated in 1987, it was all the football coaches that taught the history classes and the social studies classes, and it was all a textbook pushed in front of you. And I'll tell you how bad it was. Like, I went to college, and this was in 1987, not 1967.
Yeah.
I had no idea who Martin Luther King was. I had no idea about the civil rights movement. I hadn't learned any of that in high school. I hadn't even talked about it. And so... There's a lot of stuff that gets missed.
I can't get my brain around the idea that we don't teach geography because
it's hard to teach history when nobody knows where things are.
Right, of course.
They don't understand the world.
It's like when I learned a couple years ago that we don't put driver's ed kids out on the road in actual cars. Uh-huh. I thought, what are we doing? How can you not? That's an essential thing.
Students are people who believe that the United States is the center of the world. It is not the center of the world. It is a part of the world. It's a part, and everything is connected. So whatever happens in China, whatever happens in Australia, whatever happens on the African continent or in Europe, we are all connected. And I used to use the example of pandemics. I said there could be a pandemic on that continent of Africa somewhere, and within 24 hours, it's all over all over the world. It's all over the U.S.
There's a part of me that knows that people are ignorant of geography, but I thought it was just the normal thing of where, we learn it and we forget it. Mm-hmm. And I know that American news doesn't really focus on international things very much, but I'm starting to think that every time you do a news story on Los Angeles, you should have a map of the U.S. Here's where it is. And every time you do a story on South Korea, you should have a map of the world. And here's where, I don't know something, because it's hard. How do you process any of that if people don't know? Okay, I'm just.
The legislature eventually mandated that financial literacy. But if you had a cap, I don't know if Guthrie's had it, but we used to have a class here in Escambia County called Life Management Skills.
It was something like that. I can't remember. I never taught that. I, lived in fear of teaching an economics class.
So you've taught financial literacy the life management skills, and you had the bankers and everybody come in, and then they got away with that. Again, it was an elective. It was something they could get rid of for the technology advances, for the science, for the STEM programs.
I think that's a very useful thing, right? Basic life skills kind of stuff.
If you incorporate it, I used to try to incorporate it into my government class. Like, I had a lady from, do you remember the Fortas Institute? I don't know if you guys.
Yeah.
I had a lady from Fortas that used to come in and talk to some of my regular government classes, and she would do this thing where she gave everybody a certain amount of money, and then she was like, how much do you think that it costs to live when you're moving out, you guys are all graduating next year, how much is rent? I don't know, $200 a month,
what about a car?
What I pay for gas. Well, what about insurance? And when they start adding it all up, you would see like their eyes were like saucers because they had no idea. And that is something that, we've kind of, I think, collectively.
And parents could and should, but often do not.
We do not. We have raised, we infantilize.
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 Yeah.
Thank you. But we keep our kids young way too long. And I'm guilty of that. Like, I was a Gen X kid, so I raised myself. Essentially, I was latchkey from fourth grade.
I had a key. My mom worked and my parents were divorced. That's right. Yeah.
But today our kids, we kind of wrap them in bubble wap and expect that
We got a text in here from somebody. This will just break your heart. But I had a student employee in a master's degree program at FSU who thought Orlando was a major seaport because she had gone on a Disney cruise with her parents.
I did want to mention something and go back to teachers.
Yeah, please.
And retention of teachers.
Because this is I hadn't intended this. I didn't intend to get two teachers in here and talk about it. But this is why I like doing this, because you never know what you're going to get. And there are so many aspects of education in both counties that I think don't get the attention they deserve. It's a hard topic to penetrate for me as an outsider, not a teacher. You know, and what you might know about, you know, Northview is not the same as what you know about Pine Forest or Gulf Breeze High or Pace. And so it's just hard. I feel like it's very hard to get enough information to cover as a topic. So I'm glad to have you guys talking about this. Jewel, you're going to say, though. Go ahead.
We need to go back to tenure in the state.
Is there not tenure for K-12?
No, you don't have tenure anymore. You don't have tenure because it used to be 3 years and you could get tenure. They got rid of tenure, court case, all this type of nonsense. And so here you go. You have this bright-eyed student graduating from school coming and they want to teach. And so there's no guarantee of a job for all of the things that you have. But I think it was 3 years. I would like to see 5 years. If I was going to be a state legislator, I would push tenure at least at 5 years, because you begin to keep your teachers.
Right.
In education, you should look at the percentage of young, of beginning teachers who do not stay.
Well, and that's, I want to talk about that, because you said something before we got on the air that I want to make sure we talk about. Hang on for just a second.
Cycle.
Candy's got last traffic on the five.
This is quick, and there's nothing happening. You're fine. 437-1620.
Okay, so before we came on the air, we were talking about teacher training, and that there's no such thing as teacher, what did you call it? Not in service.
You had to do an internship.
Internship.
Years ago,
you used to have to do an internship. That's right.
Internship. And an internship was great, simply because you could go say, I want to teach elementary school, I want to teach high school, I want to teach middle school.
Yeah.
And you did 6 or 8 weeks. I think when I did it in the 80s, it was 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And you went to a school and you had a mentor.
Yeah.
Someone who helped you through that. But as the years have gone by, we have gotten away from creating that. Some teachers shouldn't even be teachers. You know, they should not come. The classroom should not be an experiment for them, for their career.
Right. No, I totally agree.
And I do think that...
So just to be clear, we don't do internships now?
It's not
student
required.
Teaching, no. If you're getting your, let's say, like I got a minor in professional education, and part of it was that I had to do a student teaching for my minor. But what's happened is, you know, trying to get warm bodies in, they really have lowered the standards in order to teach. And so, you know, they a lot of times get people in before their certification is even done.
Like they don't even have to. They have to do it eventually, right? Okay.
And they drop them right into the classroom, and there is no scaffolding. I'm not in favor of tenure. I feel like there's a lot of other things that could be done to make the. I do think the job needs to become more attractive. I think there needs to be scaffolding for new teachers. I think that, you know,
by scaffolding you mean guidance and
safeguards. Yeah, like you get assigned a mentor teacher when you come in.
Yeah, things to help you succeed, right?
And if you had like for instance in Santa Rosa County, you know, if there was designated planning periods during the day where you could assign a teacher to go and sit in on a more experienced teacher and how they did it.
Yeah, to observe and learn, right.
I'm going
to
tell you, man, I felt like I went into it, I didn't start teaching until I was, you know, my early 40s, and I had already had kids of my own, and I felt like I knew what I was doing, and I almost quit the first year because I was working probably 60 hours a week trying to get everything done. And there is an impossible amount of busy work that gets forms we have to fill out and boxes we have to check that mean nothing. I mean, really, that everyone is just there are so many inconsistencies and inefficiencies, I think, in the administration of teaching. And I'm not going after administrators because they have a tough job too. But I do think that we do have to start thinking about how to make this job attractive, you know, so that young people do want to come in and say, come on in.
The
and I think tie it to get paying off student loan debts.
The number of teachers who express a sentiment something like this, I love teaching, I love my kids, I hate this job, and it makes me want to quit the job because the job is so overwhelming. I was hearing that repeatedly at the school board meeting. And, like, I know when I taught college, I mean, you know, they give you like a 3-hour kind of, here's kind of what teaching looks like, and now go, you do what you've learned and seen from you. There's nothing in terms of preparing people to teach, which is why you get some terrible teachers.
Even added on, if they didn't want to go back to the tenure, because a lot of seasoned teachers are getting ready to go. So you have to find a way to keep them and keep them, because they're the ones that are going to be the mentors. But again, teacher pay. I told someone, I was a dean here in Escambia County, so I got a supplement. Mm-hmm. So if you weren't a dean, you didn't get that supplement as a dean. I could work 27 hours in 27 years. I worked 27 years in this county and couldn't make and could make $60,000 a year.
Well, and
that's 27 years.
After 27 years, uh-huh. Right, which is a lot.
You couldn't make that. So
we are so totally out of time. I'm sorry. So Kim Klein, Jewel Canada Win, thank you both for coming in. This is fascinating. I may try to schedule you guys again sometime because there's so much of this we can talk about that's important. Have a great weekend. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Local Talk in the Morning, 5 to 9 with Andrew McKay is on News Radio 92.3. WNRP Golf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.
Another tack on tariffs. I'm Chris Foster of Fox News. New tariffs are in effect, replacing others expiring today, covering more than 99% of U.S. imports, the White House says.
Imports from 60 countries.